Assalamu alaikum and hello and welcome dear viewers to Weekly Scope. I'm joined here inside the studio live with journalist Serena Sahem to speak about several topics that we picked up for today. Hello and welcome to our program, Serena Sahem.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thank you. Before having a conversation, dear viewers, we will take a look at a report that would summarize headlines picked up from some important newspapers along the region, and we will be right back. Starting with the Middle East online newspaper, in Tunisia, rally for women's rights turned into pro-democracy protests. According to the writer, hundreds of people protested in Tunis on Saturday against the Islamist-dominated regime in a rally that was originally planned in support of women's rights, witnesses said. Moving on to another article from the Middle East online with this headline, fresh unrest in Egypt, Morsi faces growing civil turmoil. A court verdict over deadly football violence sparked fresh unrest in Egypt on Saturday, with several buildings torched in the capital, as Islamist President Mohamed Morsi faces growing civil unrest. Middle East Online also shed the light on the fact that rights group condemned heavy jail terms against Saudi activists. A Gulf rights group has strongly condemned heavy jail terms against two prominent Saudi rights activists and called on the authorities in the kingdom to free them immediately. Karzai, U.S. in daily talks with Taliban in Qatar. U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel's first trip to Afghanistan was overshadowed on Sunday by a contentious speech by President Hamid Karzai and a security scare that forced their press conference to be cancelled. Moving on to Iranian newspaper Tehran Times, with Egypt protesters target Suez Canal as soccer death sentences confirmed. Egyptian protesters tried to disrupt shipping on the Suez Canal, an artery for global trade, after a court confirmed death sentences for 21 soccer fans from the has provided financial support for the terrorist Al-Qaeda-linked group of Al-Nusra Front in Syria, a report says. UK, France training Syrian militants in Jordan. British and French instructors are training militants in Jordan to fight against the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, a British newspaper says. Saudi-backed regime forces attack Bahraini protesters. Bahraini security forces have attacked demonstrators who were protesting against the government's harsh crackdown on their peaceful movement in the Persian Gulf Kingdom. Finally, from Tehran Times, Israel mistreats Palestinian children in custody, UNICEF. Palestinian children detained by the Israeli military are subject to widespread systematic ill-treatment that violates international law, a UNICEF report said on Wednesday. Moving on to Al-Lebanese Al-Akhbar English newspaper with this headline on their front pages, abused Nepali workers flee Jordan. Moving on to another article from Al-Akhbar, Saudi Arabia frees female prisoners jailed this month. Al-Akhbar also highlighted Israeli forces tear gas Palestinian wedding procession. And from Lebanon, Lebanese women to launch hunger strike over domestic violence law. Moving on to Pan-Arab al-Sharq al-Awsat with this headline, Bin Laden's son-in-law pleads not guilty. Finally, from al-Sharq al-Awsat, shoe attack on the floor of Iraqi parliament. The approval of Iraqi's controversial 2013 budget yesterday was marred by further controversy after a physical altercation broke out between two rival MPs, al-Sharq al-Awsat has learned. Okay, Serena, of course, here to remind our viewers, you were in Turkey and you were covering live what's happening over there. I'm really glad for having you on my show today. Of course, you would be a clear witness of what was taking place rather than articles that we can read every now and then. At the beginning, of course, a major question before going on into our own analysis. How do you view your task inside Turkey? Did it give you a wider vision of what was taking place over there?
Well, of course, and it's always like you said, you know, when you're watching things on the media or when you're reading newspapers, it's a completely different world than what you will actually be seeing on the ground. And it most of the time surprises you. Now, not only was I in Turkey, but I was also, you know, when we're going to talk about Turkey, we're basically going to be talking about the Syrian crisis. Because most of the things that are happening and most of the reason that the Syrian rebels have been able to have so much weaponry, so much aid, so much facilitation from the Turkish government is probably going to be one of the main topics that you want to discuss, because this is the biggest issue at the moment.
Okay.
However, I'd like to begin with you in Syria, if you could give me a moment. When I was in Syria at the beginning of the uprising, peaceful uprising, I mean, it's known that people wanted reforms. People stood up. I interviewed many people. But the same thing that I heard over and over again is that we want President Bashar al-Assad. We want Syrian President Bashar al-Assad.
So that was heard from the beginning.
That was heard from the beginning. And the Syrian people are not a stupid people. You know, they're well educated, and many people know of their stance in society, especially the ones that have been educated. And most of them said, do you think that we want it to happen to our country what happened to Libya or what happened to Iraq?
So we don't want that. Actually went aware
Let's
of
get our reforms. And Syrian President Bashar al-Assad said, okay, we're going to do reforms. And he had some peaceful protests here and there. I was there at the beginning. Then all of a sudden, I left and I went and I carried on in Tripoli, Lebanon. That's another border region dealing with the Syrian
crisis.
Definitely,
which is a major one.
However, by the time that I left, you hear new reports. And okay, now the war has become a sectarian war, and it's become a Sunni Shiite war. And that's a little bit of the what I can tell you about what happened inside Syria. And then what I think, from what I've seen, from being in so many different locations, and especially in locations pertaining to the Syrian conflict, what I think is that this peaceful so-called, I don't want to say revolution, but I want to say people wanting reforms with the same Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad. And I think that's why the Syrian president is pushing so hard to get to the ballot box in 2014, because he knows that
he's confident.
He has a wide majority of the population who wants him there.
Serena, actually, you mentioned a great point. You were in Syria before being in Turkey, and the major question asked today is about this shocking change in foreign policy, Turkish foreign policy, towards the relationship with Syria. It was never like that, or at least it was never that tough. As long as you've been in Syria and then been in Turkey, how would you describe today the relationship between the Syrian government and the Turkish government? This change, let's say, in stances and also in
very,
policies.
Well, this is a very, very big change in stance, and the Turkish people realize that. I mean, I haven't been in Syria since the beginning of the chaos. However, from a Turkish standpoint, I mean, you have different areas. Like when you want to talk about Istanbul or you want to talk about your more metropolitan cities, you know, people aren't really that interested in foreign politics or in politics for the most part. However, when you get to the border regions where they see it with their own eyes and they witness what's happening, like when you're at the border, like let's take the border region of Hatay, for example. Now, these people are all buyers and sellers, traders. They've lived their whole lives going back and forth from Syria to Turkey. And everything is fine. So when you want to come in and you want to tell these people Turkey was a bad neighbor, we're scared of Turkey. Or excuse me, we're scared of Syria, and that's why we want to set up Patriot missiles. And that's why we need a radar defense system.
Yeah, these are words that are not common among the Turkish civilians or even citizens,
well,
right?
Well, there's a divide between that as well, and I'd like to get back to that. But what I'd like to point out to you, for the most part, is these people are saying, are you trying to pull the wool over our eyes? What are you trying to say? We are here. We are witnessing it. We know that for 25 years or however many years, maybe even longer, there has never been a problem at our border. Why now do you put these Patriot missiles? Why now do you expect that there's going to be a problem? Why after the Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and his wife, and the Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad, and his wife, and their children, met all the time, and they lived wonderful relationships for a long time. So, to get to your question, because I think that this is what you have in mind, the idea of what's happening here is that people are wondering why the sudden change. So what people say, and according to the residents and according to the people, especially of the border communities, they think there's been a deal made by the Turkish Prime Minister, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and America and the U.S. and the allies.
And Gulf countries also
the allies in the region, you know, but most notably America, because when you're on the streets in Turkey, the same rhetoric that I've heard time and time and time and time again is we do not want imperialism.
Yes.
We are against imperialism. You know, Turkey thinks of itself as a strong nation.
Mm-hmm.
They're not waiting for America to come and save them from something that's not going on. First of all, even if there was a threat, they don't feel that America needs to come and handle that, because they feel that later on, just the same way things happened in Libya, and just the same way things happened in Iraq, and just the same way that things happened in Afghanistan, we're coming to help, and then at the end, you destroy even more.
Yes.
So the people basically know that in Turkey.
Okay. Of course, you described how the Turkish people are towards their own government, and a lot of questions comes after that, as in, are the citizens, the Turkish citizens, aware of the intentions, at least, of the Turkish government while being that much involved in Syria? Do they really understand the connotation behind that? Do they say that, well, probably the Turkish government is so much interested of being part of the European Union, and that's the only way to do it?
Like I said previously, I mean, I can relate it to as far as America.
Okay.
I mean, America is becoming more and more day after day, from the things that we're seeing on television, more aware. But for example, Turkey has 170 some local television stations that don't air the opposition's views. I mean, how are people supposed to know? I mean, you're basically being spoon-fed the information.
Yes.
Do you understand what I'm saying? So, however, you see protests all the time, because in Turkey you have big bazaars, you have big areas where thousands and thousands of people are walking, and then you see protests, and then people turn their eye towards them, and they say, well, really, what is this for? But as far as the border regions are concerned, they get the idea.
Yes, you mean that, as you've seen in direct contact, you've been with the Turkish citizens, you think that most of them don't even know what's actually happening on the borders, or not interested to know more because of this kind of, let's say, the security that the Turkish government gives to the citizens,
right,
and that's why they don't...
I think that's the main part of it, but from my experience and from going and actually talking with people on the street, very seldomly do I hear the fact that people are respective of the Patriot missiles at the border, or that people are respective of foreign troops on their land.
Okay.
I mean, that's surprisingly, because you would expect that there would be, like, I mean, especially after having so much media, basically, and there's threats in the media over there, big time threat. I mean, Turkey was labeled from Reporters Without Borders as the biggest prison for journalists in the world.
Yes.
So people are scared. And not only are the people scared and the journalists, but the companies that support them are scared as well. I mean, if there's a big issue that's going to come out, they will literally get called by the Prime Minister himself or whoever works around him.
These are important informations that probably the media do not understand, or probably most people don't get it, that actually the reason why we do have these kind of articles reaching us on a daily basis is because the Turkish journalists are not allowed to express their own selves. Democracy is not allowed, and that's why I'm actually focusing on what you've seen on the ground, because it's opposite exactly to what is seen here. And here another question comes to mind, Serena. What's the benefit that Turkey will have from sending these weapons?
This is the thing, and that's what I've heard from several people along the border region, because I always like to talk about what I've heard from people as well as politicians, because there's a big
connection.
However, the CHP party, which is the main government opposition party, it's called the Republican People's Party. Okay, that's in Turkey. They have said time and time again, we don't want them. Now, the answer why they think that the Turkish Prime Minister, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, has agreed with NATO's demands and agreed with the U.S.'s demands is because they think that the U.S. has put Erdogan there, and that they have told him, you know, do our wheeling and dealing in the region, and we'll give you the region, or we'll give you Syria if we get Syria. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. So that kind of promises.
Right, and that's what it seems that the deal between them is, and that's what I've heard from people.
Yes. Okay. Of course, here you also mentioned, I wanted to ask about what's Turkish aim behind sending these opposition, or sending all these weapons into the Syria through the borders,
well,
through the opposition.
Well, because they want Syria as fast as they can get it. You know, well, this is what's happened. Okay, Colin Powell, a former U.S. Secretary of State.
Okay.
The man under him, I think his name is Lawrence something, I can't recall. However, he said that the pretext of saying that Syria is going to be using chemical weapons is completely false.
Okay.
And this is under the former U.S. Secretary of State. He's saying it. Mm-hmm. He's saying, but what I can tell you mm-hmm. is that it does seem that the U.S. is preparing to start a ground invasion in the country. Mm-hmm. Now, Colin Powell himself said in 2004 mm-hmm. that since we've lost in Iraq and since we've lost in Afghanistan, we're not going to take this route anymore. And we can't afford to. So what we're going to do is we're going to let the closest people to the problems handle the situation. Now, in Libya, they use France.
Yes.
Now, in Syria, they're using Turkey. Now, however, Turkey right now, there's a little bit of mixed feelings because it seems that Turkey kind of feels that America left them, you know, by themselves like a fish out of water. Mm-hmm. You know, they're waiting for the green light to America. When are we going to go in? When are we going to take it? Let's take it. And America's kind of scared. And that's where a lot of people, first of all, you have two things here. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say, what are we going to do with these weapons?
Yes.
Even if, let's say, mm-hmm. the Syrian president were to fall. Okay, let's say you still have all these weapons. Where are they going? And a top Israeli commander today, mm-hmm. okay? Can't remember his name as well. However, he said, now these militants are fighting Bashar al-Assad, but tomorrow they're going to be fighting us. So the same thing that Bashar al-Assad has been saying from the beginning, you have been sending in militants to our countries, there's Libyans, there's 2,000 Libyans that are trained in Istanbul. Mm-hmm. I don't know the exact, every week, every day, every month. However, it is happening. Now you finally woke up to say, yeah, this is going to not only have repercussions on Syria because Syria is completely destroyed, but it's going to have repercussions on the entire world, the region and the world. And then you have the second aspect of that. Now you have Iran that they are trying, you know, this is basically, and that's what the officer under Colin Powell said as well. He said that this is not an attack on Syria. This is an attack on Iran.
Yes.
So you have, and he said you have a Congress, and you know, we know very well that the Congress is highly, 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 highly affiliated with AIPAC, with the Israeli lobby.
Yes.
So you have this Israeli lobby that is itching to get rid of Iran mm-hmm. because they know that Iran is the only deterrence in the region, and that, you know, if they were to get this nuclear weapon, which we know that they're not, and they need it for peaceful purposes, and they have every right. And not only do they have every right for peaceful purposes, but to have it as well. Who are you to say that India can have it? And who are you to say that Pakistan can have it? And who are you to say that Israel can have it? And then when it comes to Iran, no. These are double standards.
Okay. Speaking also about the relationship between the Persian Gulf countries and the Turkish government, here, of course, we do know that most of these weapons, they're funded by the Persian Gulf countries and sent through Turkey to Syria. Mm-hmm. Here, speaking about the Turkish-Persian Gulf Arab countries' relationship, after this movement and after using their borders at least to send these weapons into Syria, how do you view the connection between these two countries and also about the vision that the Turkish people have towards the Persian Arab Gulf countries, as long as they feel that, well, our ground, our territories are used for these transmission of weapons here, how do they view the Saudi Arabians also?
The Turkish people?
Yes.
Okay, well, first of all, that's a very complex question, and it needs, you know, more than one answer. Mm-hmm. Now, from the beginning, what is happening and why are they allowing the weapons to be sent in through Turkey is because Turkey is the only unmanned border.
Yes.
I mean, they have completely turned a blind eye. I go to do reports at the Bab al-Hawa, mm-hmm. the Bab al-Hawa border crossing, which is in Bab al-Hawa on the Syrian side, Bir-i Haniye district on the Turkish side. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to ask Turkish security for permission. I have to ask the militants for permission.
Yes.
So what does that tell you? The militants are in control of the border. I mean, do you want to tell me that the militants can't send in as many weapons
yes.
as they want
yes.
if they're in control
yes.
of that border?
There is a risk here, of course, of things losing on. But the question here asks, Serena, as long as you're viewing this from the beginning, where do you see things going? Where do you see this heading to? As long as more weapons are coming into the borders, Turkish involvement is increasing within the Syrian crisis, and obviously Erdogan wants to see Bashar Assad going down. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, no, he will not stop because he started that from the beginning.
Well, he started that from the beginning, and it's not only that. It's because there's promises and negotiations accusations that have been made under the table between Recep Tayyip Erdogan and the West. I don't know who specifically, I'm assuming America, and he wants to get the job over with. And he knows as well. He knows as well if it doesn't end soon, that it's going to infiltrate into his society.
Exactly.
And you're going to see those butchers that you see in Syria.
Yes.
Come on in. It's radical Islam.
So
everybody's afraid of these radical Islamic groups.
Islamic. Okay. So here we're saying that, of course, if Bashar Assad won and stand and protected his chair in Syria, then therefore that would definitely negatively affect Turkey, because all their hopes of being part of Syria would fail.
Well, you know, I can't really answer that question for you that well. I mean, I'm assuming so, because everybody wants their interests. Everybody wants their borders to be further from the beginning of time till now. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
But the thing is that the Turkish prime minister right now, like, let me tell you a little bit about local Turkish politics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing is that Erdogan, he doesn't want to leave. Okay. Mm-hmm. His term as prime minister is over.
Yes.
So what did Erdogan do? And many say that these are tactics set forth by America. These are all of their plans.
Mm-hmm.
What did he do? He's now trying to change the society into a presidential society, which in turn he will be able to run for another, let's say, 8 years. So he really is, and even the Syrian president Bashar al-Assad, he did an interview with RT a few months ago, and she asked him, what do you think, you know, why is he doing this? And he said, I think that he has dreams of being the new Sultan. And it
seems that this
glory and this, we were the empire and
he
we
wants
ruled
to get it
for
back.
500 years,
yes.
We're trying to get it, they're trying
and
to
And the only way
it.
To get it back is through Syria, and
of
it's
course,
by the fall of
Syria,
the Syrian president.
Syria is, and that's the thing where they made the mistake. They thought, and I don't know who told Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan that 2 months or 33 days or whatever the case is going to be.
2 years, more than 2 years.
And
now.
Syria is going to fall. It's going to be the same thing that you saw in Libya. It's going to be the same thing that you saw in Egypt, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where America always goes wrong. When they invade Iraq or when they invade Afghanistan, they don't really know the facts on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And because these uprisings or whatever you want to call them are working here doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to work here.
Yes.
And especially when you've hijacked a peaceful, not revolution, but a peaceful people urging for reforms, which is their God-given right to do.
Okay.
And then you have a president saying, okay, I will make reforms. And then you have Tunisian nationals, you have Libyan nationals, you have Sudanese nationals, you have Moroccan nationals coming in and fighting a war inside of your country.
Exactly. Before our time is up, Serena, the final question here is that where do you see things going inside Syria? Because a lot of people, NATO's on the borders, and of course I wanted to ask you about if the citizens see it as an invasion, but here, NATO's on the borders, more weapons are coming up on a daily basis, of course we're having more pressure, sanctions on Syria. Where do you see things going? Would we have a total NATO invasion inside Syria in the coming days?
I don't think so. I personally do not think so. I mean, I can't tell you, you know, what's really going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But I know one thing. If there's a NATO invasion in Syria, that's going to lead to World War III. Okay? Which nobody wants.
Yes.
And the
that's the simple analysis that one can actually...
Right. The Iranian Army Chief of Staff, Hassan Firouzabadi, said that these missiles are a prelude to World War III. That means that they're the beginning of World War III. Because when you're going to go in, it's not going to be that easy. We're not going to accept it. There's certain parties that aren't going to accept that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to use your might, we're going to use our might, but America is not going to win. There's not going to be any winners. So are they willing to take this this step? Are they willing to put their feet in shaky waters? I don't think so.
Okay. Serena Sahem, a journalist, of course, you've been in Turkey and you've said it all. Thank you very much for sharing this important information with us today. It's my delight to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Dear viewers, that's all the time that we have. Thanks for watching. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.